Welcome back to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Information regarding the resources referenced on today's program can be found at www.knowingthetruth.org. Now, here to continue with today's program is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Well, coming out just the other day on October 7th, this was listed on Fox News. It said this: the Supreme Court on Monday turned away appeals from five states looking to prohibit gay marriage, effectively legalizing same-sex marriage in those states and likely others, but also leaving the issue unresolved nationally. And the article goes on to say that the justices rejected appeals from Indiana, Oklahoma, Utah, Virginia, and Wisconsin, and the court's order immediately ends delays on gay marriage in those states. Couples in six other states, Colorado, Kansas, North Carolina, South Carolina, where we're broadcasting from today, West Virginia, and Wyoming, also should be able to get married in short order. Those states would be bound by the same appellate rulings that were put on hold pending the Supreme Court's review. So obviously, this was a major setback for the American family that we saw take place just recently here with the familiar foe, unfortunately, now of the American family, the United States Supreme Court. And so on the program today, we have a very timely interview. The timely interview deals with a book that speaks on that very issue. It's a book that addresses the title of it is Who Killed the American Family? And one of the statements associated with it says this: American families are the backbone of this nation. The American family is the fundamental institution that provided the founding fathers with the emotional support and driving courage to face the tyrannical government that threatened their very existence. The American family used to be the fundamental institution of our stable, liberty-loving, and very successful society. It's the essential building block of a free society with limited government. In the last 100 years, the American family has been under attack. It's been debased. It's been maligned, slandered, and vilified by every facet of society. No family is safe from the official busybodies. At issue is a rebellion against any sort of moral code. And so we want to talk to the author of that book, Who Killed the American Family? And that author is none other than Phyllis Schlafly. She's a national leader of a conservative movement since the publication of her best-selling book in 1964. The book was A Choice, Not an Echo. And she's the author of 20 other books. Most people in our listening audience here on Christian Talk 660 don't need much of an introduction. They've been following her and her Eagle Forum newsletter for many years. She also has radio commentaries that are heard on over 600 stations. And so she's been just a legend in the conservative movement. Phyllis, it's a pleasure to have you on the Knowing the Truth radio program today.
Well, hello, Pastor Kevin. So happy to join you.
Well, glad that you could. The American family is certainly under attack, right?
Yes, it was. And as you pointed out, that the American family was the way our country started. We were a country of what's called nuclear families. That's a man and a woman married to each other and raising their own children in one household. And, you know, that is not only good, but it's a good economic unit. They know how to spend their own money. They know how to organize their time. They don't need government busybodies to direct their life. And now we have various groups that have tried to break it up to serve their own purposes. And that's the problem we're having today, because once you break that up, you're getting big government in the picture.
You point out in your book that not any one of these different attacks that have come against the family could have successfully brought the American family down. But what happened is that there was a coalition of them, an unholy coalition, that joined together and conspired together. And together, the sheer weight and force of those things all together have really worked to the demise of the American family.
That's exactly right, and I kind of compare it to Agatha Christie's old book, Murder on the Orient Express, where the mystery was to find out who committed the crime, and the answer was everybody on the train had a motive for committing it. And so I identify at least six of these different groups. It's not just the gays. They, of course, are trying to abolish marriage, not just get themselves married, but abolish the whole institution. And then the feminists are another group. They are they're campaigning against what they call the patriarchy, and they look upon men as the enemy. And that's so unfortunate. You wake up in the morning thinking you're a victim of the patriarchy. You're probably not going to be very happy, and they're not. But then there are a lot of other reasons, too. And the family courts have played a big role in the decline of the number of people who are married today. Because after we established unilateral divorce, we have the breakup of the family. And then you find that not so many people are getting married, and there are all kinds of financial incentives for women to have babies without getting a husband.
Yeah, with the removal of the father from the home, the devastating impact that that had on the family unit was just legendary. As we look at all of the negative results of that, the children that then go on to be incarcerated afterwards, the poverty that they are forced to live under as a result of that, just a whole slew.
But let me point out, Pastor, that it's not the poverty that is causing these handicaps for the children in school. They used to think that, and that's why we poured so much money into schools, to the public schools. But now the new surveys show it's the difference between the kids who live with a mom and a pop, their own.
That's right,
and,
exactly.
And those who don't.
Yes.
It's not the poverty. It's the lack of stability of the nuclear family that is causing the pay gap that's going on in the school.
Yeah, I always pointed to the fact of the fruit of the father not being there, one of the fruit that they were suffering in poverty as well. Let me ask you about this in the third chapter, under the chapter talking about outlawing the family. You highlight the libertarian attack on marriage. There's a lot of talk about libertarianism today, and a couple of the candidates that will probably be running in 2016 have libertarian backgrounds. What did the libertarian movement do that destroyed or helped to lead to the demise of the American family?
Well, today the libertarians are trying to say you want to get government out of marriage. But I pointed out in a recent column that is now available on my website, eagleforum.org, that the masterminds and the theoreticians of the libertarian movement never attacked marriage. The man who wrote Road to Serfdom never attacked marriage. Ayn Rand, who was not a particularly moral person, still did not attack the institution of marriage. That is a recent development. And I think they're a bunch of hypocrites because while they say they want to get government out of marriage, they don't talk about getting government out of divorce. And it's when the marriage breaks up that the big brother government comes in and decides, runs your whole life, decides how many hours a day you can see your own kids, how much money you have to spend, how much money has to be transferred from household to household. And Really, we even had some judge that decided what church the schools the kids could go to.
Phyllis, with the father being missing in action in so many homes then and the breakup of that nuclear family that you were talking about, another group then stepped in order to take the father's place, and that group was the state itself with welfare reform and other things. What sort of an impact did that have on the family?
Well, it's not the same. Children need a father to be the protector and provider and to set some standards for the children. But once you take the father away, and once you take away his mission, and he doesn't feel needed anymore, he's waltzing down the street to the bar, probably. And then you have the welfare systems. And the Heritage Foundation has pointed out that there's 78 different agencies that are providing all kinds of cash and other benefits to the broken families. And that provides incentives. So I've got another chapter on the incentives, the financial incentives to people to have children without marriage and to continue to have children without marriage.
You even highlight in that section some of the disincentives, things like college loans and these types of things.
Yes, and they're outright payments. They're payments for housing, for food stamps, for energy, for all kinds of things. In fact, I've got some instances in the book where the government official will be explaining to the woman how much you're going to lose if you get married. And that's extremely unfortunate. When babies are born, you know, a woman's got her mission to do something and take care of this helpless little creature. But the father needs to have a purpose in life and a mission, too.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take that away from him, he's not going to be interested in hanging around.
Let me remind our listening audience, we're speaking with Phyllis Schlafly, and we're talking with her about her brand-new book, really an excellent book. It's called Who Killed the American Family. You can get it out on Amazon or any place where great books are sold. Phyllis, I wanted to point out and ask you about the common denominator between many of these different groups that have attacked the family seems to be what you write about in Chapter 6, where there is this redefinition of the family that has been taking place from a number of different sources, psychologically. All of the psychological quote-unquote experts are trying to say that we need to redefine the family and so forth. Speak to that issue for a moment, if you would, please.
It all stems from this expression, the best interest of the child, which comes to us from English law. And traditionally and originally, it meant that the biological parents were the ones who should decide what was best for the children. But the judges took over that. You notice how in this recent court case, the judges think they're the last word and they should make all decisions. So they took over the care of the children and the right to decide what is in the best interest of the child. Now, they had no scientific to decide those decisions. And sometimes when they got tired of making that decision just by the seat of their pants, they called on so-called experts. Now, an expert is anybody who hangs a college degree on the end of his name, and they would bring him into court to give their opinion. Now, there's no science behind the opinion they're giving. As I say in the book, you'd be just as well off, maybe better off, if you ask your grandparents for advice.
Mm-hmm.
Because we did raise good families in past years, and somehow what they're doing now is not working out so well.
You bring up a great point we lose Phyllis? We'll get her back on the line. I want to see if we ask her about that point that she was just making, where she talked about the idea of turning to the grandparents for information. You know, this used to be where the family was modeled. This was where young couples got their idea of what their family should look like from their parents and from their grandparents. And now today, since there is so much mobility that takes place and people aren't as connected with their grandparents and so forth as they were in years past, you know, does that have some sort of a bearing against the family? Phyllis, I was going to ask you, as you mentioned there just a moment ago, about the grandparents and that people would, young couples would turn to them for advice on what they should do, and they would look to them as a model of what their family should look like. Disconnection then between the current family, the young family today, and the grandparents has then been also detrimental to the family, right?
It certainly has, because the grandparents, in most cases, did raise an intact family that didn't look to government for its solution. I grew up during the Great Depression of the 1930s, and families stayed together then to face the economic problems. Even the black family was intact during those years of the Depression. It was not poverty that broke them apart. It was the Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty, in which he made somehow the decision that the money should flow through the woman. And when all the money came from the woman, the father became unnecessary, irrelevant. Mm. And so he took off. And so that just brought about more subsidy and in these incentives, which are powerful economic factors.
Mm. Phyllis, in Chapter 7 of your book, you talk about how culture mocks the family, and we certainly see this in popular culture today. What are some of the things that you write about in that chapter that are important for the families listening today to keep in mind?
Well, you can see it any time you turn on the TV, of course.
Yes.
But you know, it's funny. When I started my campaign to fight the Equal Rights Amendment, I thought the issues were going to be pay and some laws that the feminists objected to. But I soon found that their whipping boy was Ozzie and Harriet.
Hmm.
Now, Ozzie and Harriet was a sitcom based on the traditional family. And I guess it was the 1970s and 80s. And you find the feminists are still yakking about Ozzie and Harriet. I found statements from Nancy Pelosi this year still kicking around Ozzie and Harriet.
Hmm.
Why are they making fun of them? They were a perfectly fine, intact family who were doing a good job of raising their kids.
Yeah, exactly. But yet that seems to be the bullseye for the jokes that are made. The father has always looked like looks like in all of these sitcoms as an out of touch, bumbling idiot that not the head of the household, as he's talked about being in the Word of God and so forth. And so it's just a bogus picture of what and certainly nothing to model the life after. So people watching that and taking their cues from popular culture are going to be led down the wrong path. Let me ask you, in the closing chapter of your book then, Phyllis, you write about the way home. What is the way back to the American family, the way that we once experienced it?
Well, we've got to stop the financial incentives. And that means, that does mean cut the welfare. And that's one way to do it. And a lot of people are going to resist that because they like all those payments that they get. But nevertheless, they are powerful going in the wrong direction. And then what we teach the children in school. Now, I assume we're telling them they shouldn't take hard drugs and trying to give them some other good advice, but we ought to give them the advice that you ought to get married before you have children. I don't think there's any schools that teach that as part of their sex ed course. And that's extremely important. The young women get to believing that having a baby is the way to get some kind of income. Big Brother government comes along and says, we'll take you out of this home where you're not getting along with your mom and you're not doing very well in school, and we'll set you up in your own apartment and give your own cash every month. And all you have to do to get all these goodies is to have an illegitimate baby.
Hmm.
So, now, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. It's giving them an incentive to act in these certainly unbiblical but also unhealthy for society ways, and we're paying them to do it. I can certainly see that. A lot of people, a lot of conservatives, a lot of Christians even now are very disheartened with the decision made by the Supreme Court the other day. What are your thoughts on that that particular decision, and what should people do now that that's been made?
Well, I did write a book several years ago called The Supremacists, and you can get it on my website since the book's now out of print. And the problem we have is a lot of judges who think they're, ordered by somebody to run the family and to decide what our culture should be. And that's most unfortunate because they don't have any more expertise. They don't have any science backing their advice that they give. And again, if you just look the way our country started, when we had a whole nation of intact families, people were able to run their own lives, and it just was better. And it also is what gives us limited government.
Mm-hmm.
Once you break up the family, you're going to have more government in your lives.
Mm-hmm. What Phyllis is referring to, for our listening audience sake, let me say that the decision the other day not only was detrimental to the family, but it was detrimental to the rights of the state, because the states that were forced then to accept gay marriage, were, many of them were states that had voted in, so by the will of the people in those states, in order to have a prohibition against gay marriage in their state. So the
35 states voted on the ballot to support traditional marriage of a man and a woman. And the judges just think they can overturn that. And that's why I call them supremacists. They think they're better than the rest, and they're entitled to dictate our culture, our lifestyle, even the marriage rules.
Well, now, as I was pointing out in the introduction, not only did those states fall then and immediately in those six or seven states that were actually part of that decision, but all the other states seem to be falling right behind it. Is it over for the American family?
Well, of course, the gays are trying to say it's inevitable, and we have to face the argument of inevitability. But I don't think it's all. You look at the vote of the people. Why didn't the court say, we're not going to make this decision, it's a matter for the people to decide?
Mm-hmm.
And where it's been on the ballot, every time traditional marriage has won, even in California,
mm-hmm.
even in California.
Mm-hmm. So what should people do now, then? Now we're talking about elections and, that then...
Well, I think the most important thing is to make sure you elect a Republican majority in the U.S. Senate. And whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, or a libertarian, you need to realize that Obama has two more years in office. And if he's able to appoint another Supreme Court justice, he can run this country for another 30 years into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we just don't want that. We can't tolerate that. And so in order to make sure that any of his new nominees would be rejected by the Senate, you need to have a Republican majority.
Thank you so much for writing this book and visiting with us for a few moments here today in order to talk about it. We really appreciate your efforts.
Thank you, Kevin. God bless you.
Okay, you're welcome. And God bless you as well. That was Phyllis Schlafly. The book that we've been talking about is called Who Killed the American Family? Again, we just scratched the surface of it. She writes in depth on these different subjects here. This was 240 pages without the notes and the indexes and so forth in the back of the book. So as I mentioned here today, we were scratching the surface. I was just giving her the opportunity to comment on some of the chapters that were there. Let me read some of these to you so you can see why it would be why it would be important for you to get a copy of this book. Chapter one is The American Family as We Once Knew, and she makes the case there about the strict father model and the nuclear family and various other aspects of that, about the family, what it looks like in other countries and so forth. And then in chapter two, she zeroes in on the feminists and speaks about the feminists disavowing the family and the influence of Marxism and so forth, the marriage gap, again, devaluing fathers, the daycare battles and so forth. And she even deals with something that she has written very much about, the dogma of abortion. And so you can read about that in that section as well. And then in chapter 3, she talks about the outline of the family, just the way that lawyers have attacked marriage and how the courts have approved illegitimacy. Of course, she speaks a little bit about the homosexual attack on marriage that we see so much taking place in just the last few days. She deals with that. Chapter 4 deals with the subject of the family courts and their attempt to control the family, child protective services, and the hostility of the family courts and so forth. Again, a lot of times done in the name of the child, but a lot of times what the decisions that they make are actually don't end up being in the best interest of the child, breaking up families and so forth. And then she talks about these in chapter 5, about the incentives that undermine the family. We talked a little bit about that, but the hidden welfare state, the income tax policy that is taking place, welfare reform. What was it, 45, was it million people are on welfare right now that I heard the other day? I mean, just astronomical numbers are taking place where there is this statism and a dependence upon the state. And then she talks about rejecting the experts of the family that are out there. She's talking about the secular ones, therapists and the self-esteem movement and so forth. And then the culture as well, about how culture speaks against these things. There is a way home. You know, the family is the institution of Almighty God. He is the one who formulated the institution of the of marriage and the family. And so this is something that he has stated. And apart from that, we cannot be a society that is God-honoring and God-pleasing. So we need to do what we can in these areas. Remember this, that the Lord Jesus Christ said, he said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth. To keep this ministry strong and coming your way, you can make a financial gift at knowingthetruth.org by clicking on the donate button.
You've been listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. For more information about the church and radio ministry, visit us on the web at knowingthetruth.org.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.